Hello and welcome to the Beacon Group's Noon Step Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Jackie and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer.
I didn't recognize any kind of cognitive decline. We're just going to check your, see if we can get the medicine straight.
Again. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting except while the speaker is sharing. If you are looking for a home group, we would love to have you. Our business meetings are on the third Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. on Zoom. To sign up for membership and to be on the email list, please visit our website, which is also posted in the chat. Our website has a lot of great information, as well as the recording of all of our meetings. Also in the chat, you will find the AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from our AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on this step of the day, and then we will automatically split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:53, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I have asked my friend Jerome to read the 12 steps.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jerome. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. 12 steps. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral imperatives and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we have harmed and made direct amends to such people wherever possible. Ten, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thanks so much, Jerome. Appreciate that. Today, we're going to hear a talk on steps 4 and 5, focus on fear and sex. Step 4 is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Please give a warm welcome to Chris S. from Blairstown, New Jersey. Thank you, Chris. So glad you're here.
Thank you very much. Hi, everybody. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. I got to start with this. Like over the years, people have have always sent me like unsolicited spiritual snippets of wisdom, you know, through email and everything. But every once in a while, I get something that's really good. I'm going to read this. This is a Newsweek.com article. And it starts off saying, missing drunk man accidentally joins search party to find himself. I just love that, you know, and we wonder why there's an anonymity statement, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh my God. All right. So my name's Chris. I am an alcoholic. I have a good picture of what alcoholism is today. You know, I am 100% in this thing with all of you. Just to quickly qualify and then get into the material. When I started drinking, from the first time I started drinking, I experienced the phenomenon of craving, the allergy to alcohol. From the get-go, when I started drinking, if it was available and I had the time and I was still conscious, I would just continue drinking. And I drank that way for 20 years. And I drank with people that did that because it was really inconvenient to drink with somebody that goes, oh, I've had two, you know, I'm gonna go home now. You know, what are you crazy? So I found the people who, you know, who really got involved with alcohol like me. And I didn't understand that was part of an illness until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, but you know, absolutely, I have the phenomenon of craving. And the other thing that happened was I got to a point where I really wanted to separate from alcohol, honest to God, wanted to separate from alcohol. And I found that I would change my mind about this separating from alcohol. And I would swear off alcohol in the morning and start drinking at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And that happened day after day after day after day. And I really, really, really wanted to separate from alcohol because it was killing me. It was, you know, it was causing unimaginable problems in my life. And my health was terrible. And I was always shattered from, you know, it wasn't even a hangover in my end stages of drinking. It was really alcohol poisoning. And I'm either drunk or I'm poisoned, you know, who the hell wants to live like that? So I really, really did try to separate and the changing of the mind is the lie that I told myself. What it was the powerlessness of the obsession of the mind that they talk about in the book Alcoholics Anonymous in Step One. I had an obsession of the mind. And that obsession pushed out all rational thought, all decisions in my best interest. Every time I swore off alcohol, every time I made promises, every time, you know, I convinced everybody it was going to be different, it never was because I was caught up in this obsession. And then there's a dash after the dash. I understand that today too, that results from massive amounts of selfishness and self-centeredness. And the manifestations of that selfishness and self-centeredness and how it trashes my life in a million ways and makes it completely unmanageable. So, you know, I'm an alcoholic. Now my job today is to talk about fear and sex. You know, they seem to go really well together. You know what I mean? And at least they did with me. And I would have to get blistering drunk, you know, to have the courage to, you know, initiate, you know, some kind of thing with that. And so it all kind of went together. But fear, it's funny. There's only like one page on fear in our text. And it starts at the bottom of page 67 and it's done by the bottom of page 68. Now when I was first exposed to the concept of fear, I said, It's not me, because I was crazy. I was daring. I raced motorcycles and jumped off bridges and, you know, would pick on the biggest guy in the bar. And you know, if you called me out in a fight, you know, I'm there, you know. So I thought I had courage and that's the opposite of fear. So how can I have fear? Well, when I really started to dig into this, you know, the fourth step is about uncovering the causes and conditions of truly the unmanageability in, of my life and, you know, what's driving my alcoholism. When I really started to dig into it, I started to see fear in a different way. I started to see it more as an anxiety. You know, yeah, I had times when I was terror stricken or really afraid, but you know, the what fear that they're talking about in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, they say it's an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of my existence is shot through with it. It causes circumstances in, that just totally blow up in my life in every single way. And, you know, as I started to work the steps, as I started, my head started to clear from, you know, active alcoholism. And I started to really dive into this material. I started to see just how true it was for me. They call it fear. They call it self-centered fear. You can call it being uncomfortable with yourself and your environment if you want to. That's kind of how it ruined my life in many, many different ways. I had a lot of anxiety, even as a young kid. If they would have had diagnostic codes, you know, in the early 60s when I was going to school, you know, they probably would have diagnosed me with an early childhood anxiety disorder or something, right? I mean, there were a lot of things I was really uncomfortable with and I really wanted to dodge and weave, like school, you know, things. I just didn't feel comfortable, like in large crowds. You know, when it was time to do certain things, it was very difficult for me. And I really thought I was unique in this. I really thought I was unique in this. I've learned that many alcoholics, you know, have similar experiences and circumstances in their life. But I would look around, like I'd be in first grade or something, and I'd look around. Everybody looks like they're having fun and they're comfortable and they don't have a care in the world. And I'm like worrying about, are people looking at me? You know, am I gonna get picked on? Or, you know, they're gonna make fun of me? I mean, I had this overwhelming sense of self, you know, from an early age, and it engendered this self-centered fear, and it didn't seem like anybody else had it. So all of a sudden I'm separated from you. All of a sudden I'm different than you. And now I got to protect myself and, you know, everything's uncomfortable and, you know, I got to figure all this stuff out. And the unmanageability started really, you know, right there. I was traumatized by this sense of isolation and self-awareness. So I discover alcohol, okay? And I'm in school and I'm doing, you know, stuff like there's square dancing in class and there's all this stuff that I'm really, really uncomfortable with. You know, I discover alcohol and so there's the self-consciousness is here on a scale. I drink alcohol and all of a sudden I'm at the other end of the scale. You know, I'm larger than life and you're lucky to be hanging out with me. And this is great. And, you know, it turned into a tool, an anti-fear tool. Okay. A fear removal substance was really what alcohol did. And, you know, I'm saying fear, but how I internalized it was being uncomfortable with myself, with my environment, with the people that I was with the situations that I was in. I just, you know, I didn't have a level of confidence and, you know, I wasn't okay with so many things, and alcohol made me okay with anything, you know? So I'm off to the races with alcohol. But some of the material in here, it says that fear is bracketed around, you know, basically bracketed in the third column of the example they use in the book Alcoholics Anonymous for resentments. Now, why is that? I've come to the conclusion that fear is involved with all resentments because we're afraid we're going to lose something we have or not get something we want, you know, and that's that. And you can't be pissed at somebody unless you think they're taking away something you have or you're not going to get what you want. It's just, it's not, you know, there's no win for that sale. So fear bleeds into our resentments, sometimes causes our resentments. And they're asking us to kind of chip this, take this aside and take a look at it. So it says, but did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? And then it says, fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. I've come to an understanding of that. That's kind of a weird statement, fear, stealing. I kind of believe that, you know, stealing is like a conscious act. Stealing is like a plan a lot of times, unless you're kleptomaniac or something. You know, you're planning. So maybe they're telling us, that this is a choice. This fear is a choice that we have. The next paragraph tells us how we write out the fear inventory. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper. And then it asks us to look at it. It says some of us once had great self-confidence. I never did. But it didn't fully solve the fear problem. Perhaps there's a better way. So okay, we've written down all of our fears. And now it's asking us to consider that there may be a better way than experiencing this anxiety, this fear, whatever whatever level we have, there might be a better way. And it says that it reminds us that we've made a decision that we're gonna trust and rely upon God. We made a decision in step three to trust and rely upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. And that really is what they're trying to tell us about fear. Now, this really hit home one time. I was listening to a talk on the 11th step, and it was by somebody who wasn't even an alcoholic. It was a Marianne Williamson tape, okay? And she was, for some crazy reason, she was giving a talk on the 11th step. And in that step, this is basically, you know, what she said. I'm going to get it wrong because it's been 20 years since I heard it. But the basic gist of it was this. We have made a decision to trust and rely upon God. We've taken a whole bunch of steps to rightly relate ourselves to God. We've really made an effort to gain access to the power of God. You know, we're firm. We're showing through our actions that we're on God's team, and you know, we're using spiritual principles as a direction in our life. What is God gonna let get through to us when we're on God's team that isn't somehow gonna be in our best interest? And she said this on a tape, and it was like an acid moment for me. You know, all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, you know, it's irrational to have 99% of the fears I have. Now, if somebody pulls a gun on me in a dark alley or a rattlesnake jumps up, you know, that's a rational fear. Okay. The fears that were an evil and corroding thread in my life were not rational fears. They were manifestations of self because I have this worldview that's based on separation from you, separation from God, isolation from you, isolation from God, disunity from you, disunity from God. And that's really where the fear comes from. So, you know, today there's very little that that upsets me. I'm a very undisturbed guy these days. You know, the people that know me, that doesn't mean, you know, I don't have normal, you know, challenges and, you know, nor, you know, I don't get upset every once in a while or whatever, but there's no more evil and corroding thread. I'm relatively undisturbed with life as it's unfolding. And I can't thank you enough, because you made me welcome and comfortable enough in Alcoholics Anonymous for me to get through this step work to get to the point where I am today and experience the grace of God. You know, so then it says, let's move to sex. It says, now about sex. Now, one thing you have to understand, when this book was written, it was written like right, you know, if not in right after the roaring 20s. Okay, Bill was kind of a younger man in the roaring 20s. And I got to tell you, you know, I do a lot of historical reading. And what I get out of the roaring 20s was, you think we all run around and have sex now? You don't know anything, man. The roaring 20s was wild. And he was in New York City, okay? It was on. And so you have to take that kind of in context, because he starts to speak about people that, you know, sex and more sex, you know, straight pepper diet, you know, more flavor for their fare. He's got a lot of language in it like that. And he starts off basically saying, you know, we do not want to be an arbiter of people's sex conduct. You know, each of us has to come to terms with that, you know, ourselves. And, you know, within our own spiritual condition, we have to come to terms with that ourselves. But you know, we're not to be the judge, the jury, and the executioner with other people. Like, you know, when I first came around, it was like, you know, don't get in a relationship for a year. And it was a rare person that didn't get in a relationship for a year. You know what I mean? And so all of a sudden you're setting us up to fail, you know, by saying something like that. And listen, I learned a lot of lessons in the first 3 years of sobriety. I all of a sudden I was awake, you know, and the, you know, there was women all over the place because I'm going to all these AA meetings. And, I learned some lessons. I learned some really good lessons. I started to develop the ability to be a good boyfriend. And then I developed the ability to be a good husband. And I needed the learning experiences to do that. So I'm not one of these guys who tells my guys, you know, not to get into relationships. I'm not God, and I'm not an arbiter. So, go forth, be fruitful, and multiply. You know, like, you know, something very wise said that once. Yeah, and I'm not going to get involved with that. But what this inventory is asking us to look for is, where have we caused harm? We must take responsibility for the harm. Now, here's a funny thing. Okay, we were driven by alcoholism, and we were powerless over alcohol. So think about that. Powerless over alcohol, driven by alcoholism. We might not have been able to do anything but what we did, really. But the trick to recovery is, even though it might not have been anything we could have changed, you know, during that period of time, taking responsibility for it is the spiritual answer. It's the spiritual answer. It brings us freedom. It sets right the wrong. It tips the scale in the other direction. Because if you're anything like me, you know, the relationships you got into were like the Hindenburg. Okay, so I'll just say in a general way, you know, what it was like when I was involved, when I was drinking. First of all, I'd have to be drunk to have the courage to, like, you know, initiate anything. You know, so I mean, that it starts off badly right there, right? And because I'm driven by this self-centeredness and the self-awareness and the self-involvement, and everything revolves around me. And how's this going to impact me? And how's she going to make me feel? And all this stuff, you know, I move into a relationship not considering the other person and the other person's needs. And the, you know, so it's about me, like, you know, come on with me, you know, and who you talking to and where you been, and, you know, all this stuff. So, you know, it starts off like ladies, I wasn't the restraining order guy, you know, but I was pretty close to it. You know what I mean? I was no fun to be around. And the ones that had sense extricated themselves from me fairly quickly. Now what that did was it made me incredibly lonely, you know, for many of the years of my life. And because all I could think about was how things impacted me because of this toxic selfishness and self-centeredness, I really started to get a distorted perspective of women. You know, like if you would have asked me the week I came into AA, Chris, you know, what's your position on women? I would have said, well, they're nuts. You know that you can't trust them. You know they're need bags. You know, and they nag all the time. You know they leave you when you need them the most. You know, that's what I think, and that's what I really would have thought until I did this inventory. And when I did this inventory, it showed me where my mistakes and my faults were. You know, I had some great women in my life over the years. You know what I mean? And if there's anybody that's a cause of that relationship having turbulence and a crazy end, it was me, because I was a blackout drinker. I was a violent blackout drinker. You know, hey, what are you doing Friday night? You know what I mean? What do you expect? So I had to go over all of these relationships, and I had to answer, there's like 9 questions, you know. I would just say definitely read this stuff. Most of the sex inventory is on page 69. So what I would do is I would go over this. And when it asks a question, that's a line on the inventory. You know, where, you know, there's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of questions here. Where would we been selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate? Who did we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? Notice that it doesn't say what could we have done instead, because I don't believe we could have done anything better than we did it. You know, we come in here with such guilt and such shame. You know, oh, I can't believe I did it. Instead of using the energy to beat yourself up with shame and guilt and remorse, use that same energy to do this exercise, take responsibility for it, and get free. You know what I mean? It's just, it's really, really sad just how beat up we are, you know, when the smoke clears. But those are the questions. Those are the questions that it asks us to do. And then it asks us to put together an ideal for our future sex conduct. Now I've seen people mistakenly put together sex ideals thinking that, you know, it's, Like, who am I going to go have sex with? You know, like, well, my sex ideal is a all female Scandinavian jazz band. Something like that is way off track. What it's asking us is to put together the attributes that we think a really solid, healthy, godly relationship is going to look like, you know, and each of us is going to put down different things. I love the latitude that this program offers us. Each of us go into it in a different way. We can have our own concept of a higher power. We can have our own concept of a future sex ideal, you know, not worrying about people arbitrating it. But we have to honestly put down in this ideal how we want to be at the next party. And then there's some instructions that tell us that we need to, you know, in prayer, really ask God to help mold us to these ideals. Now, how has this stuff worked in my life? Okay. if you saw some of the people in the last years of my drinking, some of the people that I were dating, has this stuff worked? Oh my God, has it worked? You know, I'm married today I married up, let me tell you. I've got an absolutely wonderful wife. You know, she's a hospice nurse and she's you know, really healthy emotionally, you know, and we never fight. And she's really supportive, and she's fallen in love with all of you, you know. The saddest thing about it is she really gets attached to some of the people in our orbit. And some of those people not practicing these principles in all their affairs in a consistent way have died. There's been like half a dozen people that she just completely fell in love with that OD'd or, you know, committed suicide. And I'm telling you, it breaks her up. That's the saddest thing I can say about our relationship. But you know, I can't tell you how happy I am. There's one person I want to be with more than anybody else on the planet, and that's my wife. And you know, this all came out of a sex ideal. It all came out of, you know, God directed, you know, right action. And you know, I can't thank Alcoholics and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, all of you. I can't thank you enough. This brilliant 12-step program that is perfect for solving my alcohol problem and all the service stuff that you've taught me would be good for my spirit and my soul. So, you know, with that, I'm going to end a couple of minutes early. You know, give the breakout rooms a few more minutes to discuss some stuff. And thank you for being here. I love the Beacon Group. Thank you.